This is Japan Baseball Weekly, the only English podcast covering all 12 NPB teams. And now, your hosts, John E. Gibson and Jim Allen.
Hi, and welcome to the Japan Baseball Weekly podcast. It's for the week of May 17th. I'm John Gibson, and with me on a Sunday night, as usual, is my partner, Jim Allen. How are you, buddy?
It must be Sunday because you said so. I'm just busy, man. You know, I'm like going, today is the day after yesterday.
And we gotta go, because we got another one tomorrow. Let's go.
Well, thank you for that. Thanks for the pep talk. That's like Zealous Wheeler doing the little pep talk before the Giants game. I feel energized, man.
All right. Well, good. Do you know, today it seemed like Father's Day in NPB today. Do you know why?
It seemed like Father's Day. I don't know. I saw a picture.
Just say no. Don't go on to another story. Just say no. I don't know. Why, John?
Why, John?
There you go. Because there were so many ties. Is this thing on?
It was, but I think you broke it. I think our recording platform rejected that joke as too much, too Jim for you.
Four ties today and 2 1-run games in the other game. So, yeah, a lot of tight games out
there.
That
was the second day this week we've had two decisions.
Only two decisions, yeah.
And only two decisions. We had three ties out of five games one night, and I think that was Wednesday, and then we had I had four ties today. So I know, yes. Jason Koskri tweeted about it, like, I've had enough. You know, I think what they need to do, you know, it just occurred to me as we were warming up for the podcast that what they need to do is to treat this tie rule the way they treated the collision rule.
Which is, start ignoring it after a while. Just let them play the 10th.
No, but just decide at the All-Star break that it ain't working. And get all the teams together and say, you know, we're just going to play it differently from here on.
Well, you know, to be honest, with the numbers of coronavirus cases going up, what difference is it really going to make? It doesn't seem to be helping.
I have to check. I am curious, though, because I think that we're having more games tied after nine innings than we used to.
Yeah, well, I would imagine, and as we get into the show, maybe we can talk about it, but I would imagine in most cases, a lot of the managers, they're making moves. They're taking, you know, you've seen multiple pitchers in an inning if necessary. Right. Guys are coming out of games earlier and they're going to the bullpens earlier and all that stuff.
Sure.
And
there's no reason to save your second best pitcher for the 10th inning.
Well, yeah, when you know, at least, not, I mean, you know it's going to be over a nine, you know, before you weren't even sure you might have it or you might not. But anyway.
So if you've got a choice between two and three in the eighth, you bring in number two.
Yeah. All right. So people, like I said, the coronavirus numbers are spiking nationwide in Japan. So hunker down and mask up if you can do that. On this week's show, we've got a chat with former Dragons and Buffalo Slugger and friend of the program, Matt Clark, and we're going to discuss both leagues and his former teams, Oryx and Chunichi, and a whole lot more. So let's start swinging.
Clearing the bases!
Well, okay, I spoke recently, in sort of liberal terms, with Matt Clark from his home in Houston, Texas, before he started his Mexican League season. Matt's been playing in Mexico for some time. He'll tell you that the story behind that, but his father, Terry Clark, was a professional pitcher, spent most of his pro career in the minors, but did play with the Mets, I believe. And so we talked about a lot of things in which you're going to hear, and he came to play for the Chunichi Dragons basically when his minor league service time ran out in 2012. You know, he was in the San Diego Padres system for all that time, and nobody, you know, he got a chance to come and play. I believe he was a minor league free agent. He hadn't been called up to the majors. So the Chunichi Dragons signed him, and he played in 132 games in 2013. He batted 238, which he'll tell you was his lowest average ever, which may have been. But he had a 328 on-base percentage and a 457 slugging average, which is not all-star material, but it's not also not bad for playing in Nagoya Dome. And they didn't want him back, but instead he was picked up by the Milwaukee Brewers for a camp invite, and he got his major league career of 16 games with the Milwaukee Brewers in 2014. And then after that, it was the Mets and Mexico. He's basically spent most of his time in Mexico, with the exception of 11 games in 2016 with the Oryx Buffaloes. He also spent most of that time in the Western League. So Matt returned to Japan in 2019 to play for Mexico in the Premier 12 tournament, which was the Olympic qualifying, one of the Olympic qualifying event. It was the second Olympic qualifying tournament for this year's perhaps Olympics. And he was instrumental in Mexico qualifying. He hit a late a ninth inning game tying home run. Against the USA and off his former Oryx Buffaloes teammate, Brandon Dixon, at Tokyo Dome. Mm-hmm. And then he also, he had another, I believe he had a double in the 10th or 11th inning when they won it. So he was instrumental in Mexico getting to the Olympics. So he's very proud of that. So let's just have a listen to Matt Clark. Okay, our guest this week, with that rousing introduction from the Mexican National Anthem, is former Chunichi Dragons, Oryx Buffaloes, and pretty much a man of the baseball world, Matt Clark. Thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me. It's always a pleasure.
It's funny because people look at your baseball career, and it's still going strong. It's, 11 years now?
Yeah, 11 or 12. It's wrapping up pretty fast.
Okay. That's right. It's already been 12. This would be the 12th. Last year was no games because of the COVID.
Yeah. A lot of miles, too, on that sheet, too.
I see that. And so on Baseball Reference, it's 1,352 professional games in the majors and minors everywhere around the world. And 16 games.
It comes up quick.
16 games in the major leagues, and people would look. Well, you just played 16 years. I look at it and I say you played professional baseball for 13 years. It's much more than 16 games.
Yeah, it feels like it's all a culmination of everything that I've done, and I mean, those 16 games in the big leagues definitely doesn't define what I've done as a player. I mean, it kind of just. One little tidbit of a long story.
Indeed, it's not even the blurb. It's not even the story.
No, definitely not.
Okay. Well, let me ask a little bit about the story here. Now, what have been, if you, looking back on your career in baseball right now, what have been the biggest challenges for you? Let's start with when you turned pro out of LSU with. Taken in the 12th round by the Padres.
Yeah, I mean, this is actually kind of, you take a step back going from LSU to A-ball, rookie shortstop.
Really?
Like, yeah, because SEC baseball is such a great environment, 15,000 people in the stands every game, and then I went to Eugene, Oregon for my first short season, and 500 people maybe, and we flew charter flights in college, and you get to Oregon first short season, and we just take a bus everywhere, and it's cramped with guys, and it's definitely, it almost feels like a step back, but you're on to the next thing. And thank God that my dad played for so long, and that I actually had a good idea of what I was getting myself into before I got there.
Okay. Mentally you were prepared for the grind.
Oh, yeah. My dad played 20 seasons.
Wow.
And a lot of think six or almost parts of 7 years in the big leagues, but I mean, 13 years in the minor leagues. He didn't have a chance to play overseas. He wishes he would have gotten that opportunity to go play in Japan. But during his career, they were searching for a lot of different types of pitchers than he was at the time. They're looking for guys that threw really hard.
Right.
Back in the 80s, early 90s. And he was just starter 90, 92. And that wasn't going to get him over there fast enough.
Right. And also the limit was different because you could, at that time, I think in the 90s, you could only have, for much of the 90s, you could only have three players on the entire roster.
Wow.
So minors, majors, the whole bit. And you could have two on the first team. Yeah. So things were different. Now, how about the personal challenges of going through the minors and playing professional baseball?
Yeah, you just, like I said, I was well prepared enough seeing my dad go through it to where not given an opportunity, even though that you put up numbers every single year, and just being able to keep pushing through mentally is probably what separates guys that play a long time from the guys that don't. And being able to stick with it, stick with the process. I mean, you know, you're going to eventually have to hit your way there at some point. Like, they can't ignore you forever. And just being able to show up at the ballpark every day, being ready to put a good swing on something. And if you have enough confidence in your ability, I mean, there's no way that they can stop you. And I'm a very good testament to that, I believe. And just keep hitting and we'll keep playing, I guess.
Did you have teammates who you sort of wish they could understand that?
Oh yeah, I mean, that's a yearly thing. Doesn't matter if you're in Japan, doesn't matter if you're in pro ball, doesn't matter if you're in the Mexican League. You run into guys that have a ton of talent, but they just don't have that one edge mentally that could have put them over the top or could have made them play a little bit longer. And it sucks to see you guys go through it, but I mean, if it was easy, everybody would do it. So
indeed. Now, first of all, tell me a little bit of how you got started in Mexico. It started early. You went and played in the Winter League.
Yeah, I think it was my AA season. 2010 was the first year I went, and that was a whole nother experience that I wasn't personally prepared for. Like, I didn't understand the style of the game, how everything was a matchup. I faced a ton of left-handed pitchers, and I was still pretty young and still trying to, even though I had a really good year that year, I still was trying to figure out my swing and my approach still. And you play against, come down, I was 2010, I was probably 22 maybe. And playing against guys that are 35, 36 years old, they know how to get you out.
Right.
And it's a whole nother experience playing against guys that 10, 15 years older than you. And it shows very quickly if you're not ready. And my first winter ball season that year, I wasn't ready, and I got exposed pretty bad, but I learned a lot from it.
Well, let me ask, I mean, that is part of the process. You mentioned a second ago about knowing that you have to have confidence in yourself and knowing that you have to make the adjustments yourself and you have to do everything yourself. There's always that clash between not being ready and knowing that you can still compete at that level with enough adjustments and with enough, you know, good fortune.
Yeah. Tell me, you're definitely, it's more about competing against yourself, I think, more than anything, because anybody that's played, they have some sort of ability to play the game. It's just a matter of being able to put it into play every single day and not beat yourself up, but mentally get down on yourself, just being able to keep going out there every day and keep playing.
Okay, so tell me, as you said, you weren't ready. So what lessons did you take away from that?
Just, I went home that year and really worked on left-on-left pitching.
Like, okay.
I needed to see it. I needed to really focus on that. And I think, like, that helped me. Coming to Japan and learning how to be your own coach basically taught me more. I learned more my first full season in Japan with the Dragons than I think that propelled me into having a better career now. I think I'm 10 times the hitter I was that year.
Wow.
And physically, mentally, strength-wise, it's a whole nother thing. So that's why I always tell everybody, I'm like, I don't think I'll retire until I stop hitting. I feel great. My approach is great. Mental side of the game is great. And I just keep building every year, and it just seems like I keep getting better. But like I said, I learned more that year about myself and myself as a hitter. It taught me a great deal that I probably will never forget that.
Okay, well, let's talk about that, because it was a good season. Your first year with the Dragons mm-hmm. was a good year, and especially I'm looking at the numbers. Okay, it wasn't prime A. You know, it wasn't yeah. Wasn't MVP season, but for mm-hmm. Nagoya Dome.
Yeah, and that's what I walked away from that year thinking I had an okay year, like not great, because I like. People don't realize that my career batting average is actually pretty high.
Okay.
And I take that personally. Like I want to hit 300 every year, and I want to hit the home runs. Like that's what I was taught okay. growing up. That was the way. That was a good year.
Okay.
300 with 20 homers. But going into that season, I struggled at first and ended up hitting probably 240-ish.
About right.
There.
Yeah.
And I thought that was a down year for me personally. I hit the home runs, but just I kind of was like a point that I always will remember. It's the lowest batting average I probably ever had in the season.
Okay, well, let's talk about that. What you know, you talked about the lessons you learned in Japan. Specifically, what kind of, I mean, you can just rattle off things. What are the things that stick with you?
Learning to coach your own swing.
Okay.
Because the Japanese style is totally different.
Right.
And the way I think about things was totally different than the way they thought about things. And everything gets kind of lost in translation as well. And they don't understand what I'm going through and vice versa. And then the pitching was on a whole nother level that to this day, anybody ever asked me about Japan baseball, I'm like, the pitching is elite. The control is out of this world, and they take advantage of it because they get a little bit off the corners, especially to the foreign players. And they're that good that they can keep throwing it to that spot and keep getting the calls. So I had to learn to not look for pitches. I was very in tune with like combinations of how pitchers pitch, like what I saw the previous at bats. And they don't do that in Japan. You can see one certain type of pitch, one at bat, and you'll never see it again.
Mm.
And it's just being able to swing in the zone at any, whether it's fastball, split, slider, just had to be aggressive in the zone because you didn't know what you were going to get because everybody throws seven pitches.
Certainly. Now, did it help you that, well, when you came, there was interleague, but let's throw out the interleague.
Mm-hmm.
Did it help you that there are only five teams in the league and you could kind of learn the players a little faster?
It does. Yeah, because I'm big on the more I've seen a pitcher, the easier it is for me to hit against them. I usually struggle the first half against people I've never faced, but learning, I don't keep a book or anything, but my memory is pretty good about guys. And that second half went so much better because I had seen everybody for the second time and I had a good idea of what was going on. And I really thought I put together a good second half that year just because of that. But they could also take advantage of you too, because you play the same teams over and over. And if you're not going to swing well against them, they'll keep doing it to you over and over again. You can have a tough series.
One of the things about interleague, I know a lot of the imported players tell me that they like interleague. Some of the guys who are just really good at the basics, see the ball, hit the ball, and mm-hmm. who are really good at blocking out all those other things people are telling them,
yep.
they love interleague because
yep.
they feel like they're in their zone. They don't yep. know what's coming.
I'm the complete opposite. I'm
okay.
very mental about what I'm looking for, I'm trying to do this, and that actually hurts you there.
Right. You're almost like a Japanese hitter in that respect, because that's how they train the Japanese guys. Learn this, yep. expect this.
Yeah, guys that go over there, I always tell everybody, like, Hector Luna was a great example of that. He hit a slider really well, and he would just see the ball, hit the ball. Same thing with Alonzo Powell. He was the same way. He told me he just looking for an area, and he'd just swing. Like, I'm like, that doesn't work for me, but it worked great for you guys.
Yeah, right. We're all different. I want to ask about playing for Mexico.
Mm-hmm.
Now, how did that come about?
Well, my grandmother is from Mexico.
Okay.
So you trace the lineage back, and I'm actually a Mexican citizen now too, so I'm dual
okay.
citizen. And I didn't know if I was going to be put on the team or what, and they just called me out of the blue that end of that season in 2019, they're like, you're on the team. Like awesome. Like, they're looking for guys kind of like me, guys that have been playing a long time and kind of had a good, very professional of how they went about their stuff. And they're like, we'd love to have you. And that was one of the more, that's probably the most most amazing experience I'll probably take away from baseball is that tournament, being able to win and go to the Olympics. Even though it's got pushed back a year, at least we're going.
Yeah. I mean, how did that feel? Tell me about that, because you grew up in the States, but you still have the connection. You still have that connection with Mexico. You have Mexican heritage. Contributing to the national team, doing something like qualifying for the Olympics. How did that feel?
What's funny is I played for Team USA in the Pan Am Games in 2011, and it's all the same people that the director, Paul Seiler, who's still a good friend to this day, he's like, I can't believe we let one of our own guys leave and then come back and beat us. So it was, I mean, to qualify for the first time, too, for the country, I mean, that means the world, and it's going to be a lot of fun this summer, and I think it's going to be really cool, and I'm interested to see who else qualifies.
Yeah.
Japan's the favorite, and they got a good team.
Yeah, so there'll be some, I'm trying to think of the lefties. None of the lefties stick out in my mind right now.
I don't even think they need them, because those righties, like Yamamoto and all those guys, they're good.
Were you teammates really with Yamamoto? He was just a rookie after.
He might have been the year after.
No, he must have been, because he was in the, like, I think first day of the season, he was in the bullpen as a rookie pitcher.
Yeah, because I still follow all the games and everything daily, and I know who's doing well and who's pitching, and it's really fun. I keep up with our translator in Nagoya, and like, I just talked to him a few days ago before the season started. I just called and wished him luck, and we still stay in contact. The friendships you make, they last a lifetime.
Is it different from other places in that respect?
I think it really is. It's like a little bit more, because you're so far away from home, they become your family.
Right.
And you never forget them. Like, so I go out of my way whenever I run into a Japanese player and try and treat them how I was treated when I was there, and go out of my way to try and help them, just to kind of return the favor always.
Okay, so tell me now a little bit about the Olympics. What's your mindset going into the Olympics and your preparation? Anything special, or does it gotta have a little extra juice?
I think once the season gets going again, because it's been such a long layoff,
right?
Get the juices flowing again once we get going. And once we take the flight over, it's going to be all hands on deck and trying, because there's only six teams, so technically you have a 50% chance of medaling.
Is the Mexican League going to take a break for the Olympics?
No, they're going to keep playing, because our season's shortened.
Okay.
I know the Japanese League and the Korean League, I think, are all taking a break.
Right.
But we're not, so I'll miss a month of the season, and then hopefully we come back and we're in the playoffs at that point. But that's the main focus of this year, is just get the season going, get ready for the Olympics.
Okay. Now, how big was it for you to play in the Premier 12 in Japan?
It was awesome. Especially Tokyo Dome is like my favorite place to play besides Jingu Stadium, because I've always hit well there. And being able to step up to the plate and hear the fans cheer for you because they remember you is one of the cooler things. And the guys, I was like, watch, when I go hit, they're going to cheer like more than normal because they remember me playing here. And sure enough, they cheered real loud and people were yelling, and it's really cool to come. It's almost like coming home again when you go back and play there.
It must have been a little different experience, because you in Japan, you weren't used to that kind of quiet when your team was batting.
Yeah, it was. It was really strange. And when we got to play Japan, that was more a real type of game. And I made sure I went to the Korea-Japan game as well, because I wanted to show everybody how it is every game.
Right.
like, you don't understand. It's sold out every game there. Like, it's loud, and everybody's, it's a very unique experience.
Okay. Well, anyway, let me ask about that. I want to think about you as a 22-year-old coming out of LSU, and if you had your 12th-round draft choice, and if a Japanese team said, you know, look, we think you can play in Japan. If you're now knowing what you know, would that be a tempting offer for you?
It would. I think it still would. And I think I would pursue it, because knowing after I played there how good it was for me, I think I would have done really well. And I made a ton of calls this offseason, this offseason and last offseason, after the tournament especially, like, I still got a lot to give, I think. I got the experience, and I was like, I'll even sign a minor league contract with someone just to come back and show everybody again that I'm a more polished hitter. And they still say I'm young, but I'm not young for the States.
Right.
But for Japanese baseball, I'm probably like right in my prime age where they think I'm good to go.
I think they're getting a little more reasonable here. They're getting a little more in tune. They used to think every former major leaguer who was under 50 was in his prime.
Yeah. Very true, because considering the guys I play with, like, some guys are still 40 years old, and they're still, like, Masa was 40-something.
Masa was Masa.
Yeah, exactly. But he's like, man, you're so young. He's like, you got, like, 20 more years to play. You're playing 20 more years.
Those are Ichiro years.
Yeah, but I definitely would have considered it.
So what would if you were a 22-year-old, what would be what would you expect to learn that you couldn't learn in Japan, in the States, going to Eugene, Oregon?
I think I might have been more prepared than a lot of people, being able to play in front of people
right
like that right out the gate. And I know they probably would have taken them a while to even attempt to promote me, because that's not how they do things.
Right.
You got to earn it and prove it every day. But I think being able to come and have that kind of power, and it would teach me how to hit, or it would have taught me how to hit faster, because I wouldn't have needed as many years and then go there and try and learn to hit again. I would have been taught right away how to hit a split, how to hit a fastball in off the plate, and things like that. I didn't learn until I got there.
Right. And you're facing pitchers. I mean, probably pitchers who, people in America don't quite understand that Japan's not like a level, you know, because you've got guys who could walk onto major league rosters, and 19-year-old kids are coming out of high school and facing these guys.
Yeah, there's so many guys. I always say that there's so many guys in Japan that probably would be on a starting lineup for any major league team. Like, Yanagita would be. It would be a joke. Like, he would be one of the best players in the big leagues,
I
think.
I know. So, okay. Well, I think that'll do it. And I want to thank you for joining us. It's been such a long time. And look forward to seeing you in Tokyo this summer.
Definitely. It's going to be a lot of fun. And I'm glad there's going to be fans in the stands. It's going to be fun.
Well, thank you, buddy, so much. He's been, as you said, a friend of the program and a great booster for Japanese baseball. So.
Always has been. Thank you very much, Matt. Hope to get to talk to you too, and also see you at some point.
soon. Indeed. So, what do you have to take away from Mr. Clark?
Well, it was a long interview. There were lots of things to take away, but I was wondering whose kids were those in the background. Were those his kids or mine? Did you come over here and tape that show? My kids running around in the background.
I heard a dog at one point. I don't remember the kids, but yeah.
Yeah, we have a dog in the neighborhood. It could have been that one. No, I really enjoy Matt and all these current and former players and coaches from whom we learn so much. And yeah, I have no earthly idea. Well, I can guess why the Dragons thought they didn't need to bring back Matt Clark. Cause I know he didn't hit it's around 250. And I think they probably wanted a little bit higher batting average. And I don't remember how he did with the glove, but maybe they didn't like the glove work. I don't know. I just thought 25 home runs, that wasn't bad. He had 70 RBIs, I believe. That wasn't bad. And you only get better. You know, he had some success. I think I was expecting him to work on that success. I think
he was 26 years old. I mean, it's not like he was done. You know, it's not like he was, you know, he had some 467 plate appearances, which is about where you get to see what he's really doing. He didn't really, maybe they were hoping he'd improve in the second half. He was about as good in the second half as he was in the first.
Yeah, 130 strikeouts. Maybe they didn't like the strikeouts. But, I mean, that's going to come with guys who are trying to hit with some power or deliver some force when they're making contact, not like they have right now anyway. So, I couldn't figure that out. I thought it was kind of I was expecting him to come back the next season, so I was kind of surprised that he didn't. They didn't bring him back. But you hear him talk about the fact that his time in Japan made him such a much better hitter and gave him he went back. He said he started working on left-handed pitching more, said he needed to hit that. And he just learned to become a better hitter. And I have that phrase, losing is learning. And I think it's proof that, you know, he didn't think he had a good batting average, even though anything, I guess, I suppose around 250 over that long a stint in which you get 400 plus at bats, you get to compete for the whole season, I think, from beginning to end. And he was getting used to Japanese baseball and the whole grind and everything. Yeah, he just seemed primed to be back the next season. So I didn't get it. But, you know, they don't ask us what our opinions are. They just do what they think is best for their teams. So they didn't bring him back. But I the fact that he said he learned so much in Japan, I think that's a big takeaway for me, that guys can come over here. They say, you know, it's so different. The pitching style is different. And not only do you have to learn a different style of baseball, but you have to think. And he talked about that mental side and pumped up that mental side of playing in Japan. And I think that's huge. We're seeing a lot of, obviously, the foreign players who came over, and they're getting a late start. They're trying to play catch up right now, in that they're going basically through their spring training. Some of them have been thrust into top team situations and been asked to just try to hold their own a little bit, and hopefully they can catch fire as they get going. But they're trying to catch up with guys who have played 40 plus games or 30 plus games in some situations. So that makes it difficult. But when you hear Matt talk about the fact that he just became such a much better hitter in thinking the game and thinking it through, and talk about, you know, you could see any pitch in any count, any situation, mm-hmm. and you just had to be ready for it. And, you know, as opposed to sitting on pitches trying to figure things out, just all that talk was just so good. And I hope the listeners appreciated it, because I certainly did. I was smiling. I listened to it as I was going to work one morning, and I was just smiling. I'm like, yeah, I love it. You know, that's what it is. Because I remember talking to Alex Ramirez and asking him about the, you know, how much hitting is mental, how much of it is physical. And he said, you know, it's mostly mental. He talked about trying to set up pitchers, you know, by taking pitches that he knows are going to be strikes, but wanting to get the pitcher to throw that pitch again and in a certain late game situation or other situations. So what was it for you that stuck out?
Well, that part of that I'll mention, it's the question I always ask is, what did you learn from Japan? And that was a unique answer, because typically the answer you get is, this coach taught me that, taught me the whole culture, taught me a new way to look at the game, or I was influenced to take my physical training more seriously, or, you know, it was the pitcher's fielding practice. It was fitting in. These are all very common answers, but I learned how to be my own coach was the first one I'd ever heard that one.
Yeah. Yeah. And that was, you know, that did make me kind of turn my head, you know, to the side and think, well, why is that? Because there are always, we have the image of always having a Japanese coach in your ear with your right. interpreter on one side and your coach on the other. Both ears are covered. And
we had this Matt Winters was a guest on the JBallAllen.com live chat a couple of weeks ago. And he told this incident. I haven't posted the video yet, but he told this incident where he was on a hot streak or something, and he was working on something, and one of the coaches came over to talk to him, and he said, "Hey, what's up?" He says, "Nothing. I don't want to mess with what you're doing, but I'm over here to talk to you so people will think I'm, you know, I'm doing my job in improving your hitting."
Yeah. I've seen a lot of that at the office these days.
so that's, you know, that's a Japanese thing. And, but yes, but I also got in that, you know, he was tuned a certain way and everybody was sort of speaking at a different wavelength. And so he got something out of it. But there was what struck me is even in an area where he seemed to be operating on a different wavelength from everybody.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, that could have been one of the reasons he wasn't brought back.
Brought back, yeah.
Yeah, because, you know, people pick up on that. You know, this is what you're telling me isn't for me.
Yeah.
But there was so much sympathy and so much positivity. And there was that and the bit about, you know, when I asked him about the pitchers, he says, "Yoshinobu Yamamoto." I'm thinking, wait, you weren't even, you know, were you teammates? He says, "No, but I watch the games. I stay in touch. I follow Japanese baseball." That was really big for me, that he's like so, and he explained the experience in Japan, one dimension of the experience in Japan as well as anybody I've heard. Usually people explain the experience on, A, you know, the people in Japan are so nice to me.
Mm-hmm.
Teammates are so friendly. The food is so good. The accommodations are so good. He explained it in a way that nobody had before, which is when you're that far from home, the importance of the personal bonds with people you work with and people who look after you are so much bigger.
Mm.
That they have an added importance. They're more important than similar ties outside of Japan. And when I heard that, I thought, you know, that makes so much sense because people always come, you know, "This is the best team I've ever played for." "Oh, in what way is it better?" Aw. But he really had, I could tell he really thought about that.
Yeah, I think, you know, you get so connected with the people that you work with when you come here. I mean, it happened with me, my first job in Japan. So all the people immediately became like family and they all wanted to help because they knew you were floundering with the language barrier. So they wanted to help. And so you depend on them a lot. And yeah, you form those bonds. And it's great. I totally understand. That was something for me, too. I'm like, I know that Matt engages on Twitter at times, mm-hmm. when he has time and he knows the topic that we're talking about. And so I've seen him engage and I always love the fact that he's talking or watching some of the games and knows what's going on and knows some of the people. And I remember a long time ago saying, well, the Dragons have this player. He can try out for third base. And Matt said, mm-hmm. What about Shuhei Takahashi? And I say everybody's got to compete for a job, even the guy, you know, who's they want to hand the job to him, but he still has to win it, you know.
And this is 8 years after he played in Nagoya, you know.
Yeah. This is great. So I love that aspect, and you know, he's still talking with his interpreter. That makes sense. And again, he came back with the Buffaloes and didn't really get much of a go there, as you just stated. What was it, 11 games? So.
Mm.
You can hear it in his voice. I think he, you know, he learned a lot in Japan, but I got the impression that he'd still like to be here.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you think so? Okay, well, yeah. I'm sure Matt will come on and tell us that again. So.
Yeah. All right, well, let's transition into talking about the Pacific League. Since Matt played for two teams, we'll talk about those teams mainly, but we're going to talk about the Pacific League first. So Oryx, I must say, I have said it already. I do like the way the team is competing. You know, it doesn't seem like a team that's under 500 still, but they're, after their loss today, they got shut out 1-0, 17-19, so only a couple games under 500. But they're looking good. Their younger players are coming on. Some of the things that I've noticed, the younger players are not coming in and goofing up the game. The guys they bring, I mean, it seemed like before they would bring a young player, even or not even not not so young player, and just a guy with a not a lot of top team experience, and they'd make some kind of mistake, miss a cutoff man. I'm not talking about the errors that go down in the books, you know, forgetting to cover a base or just a step slow to first base to cover for a pitcher or throwing to the wrong to base or something.
Yeah, throwing to third base when the third baseman's not covering the bag, you know, as we had.
Or the third baseman's covering the bag, but he doesn't make the tag or doesn't step on the bag or whatever. So they're not doing a lot of that. So they're not beating themselves more. And consequently, they're better competing in some of these games that they're playing. And Satoshi Nakajima, the manager, he's a little rah-rah. He's up. He's positive. He's down when they do non-productive plays, let's call them.
Okay.
Because they're not necessarily errors.
Yeah, we've seen him bury his face in his hands a few times. Yeah.
He's emotional, but that's good. Not too much.
That's pretty much part of the typical Oryx Buffalo's broadcast is watching, having the camera trained. Well, I'll be unfair. A typical part of any Japanese baseball broadcast is a camera trained on each manager at all times to catch their reaction to certain things in the game.
Right.
They just like to cut away to Nakajima more.
Yeah. Well, and these, you know, hopefully we can get everybody in baseball vaccinated and get people back to not wearing masks so we can see these facial expressions, because I think we're missing a lot, especially there and in Hokkaido as well. But anyway, Yutaro, I like to call him Sugi Mash Mash Moto. I remember when he kind of burst on the scene, I think it was 2019, and he hit a couple home runs in Tokorozawa out at the Seibu Prince, whatever it is, dome. And I'm like, oh man, this guy, he looks like a masher.
And one of them landed in Tokyo.
Yeah. And I thought, oh, this guy is a masher. And then he went back down to the farm because he just wasn't good at hitting pitches in all zones, you know, which is what you have to be able to do is cover the plate, hit in all the zones that they're going to mostly find with their pinpoint control, as Matt Clark talked about. So, but this year he seems to be different. He's not trying to mash every pitch out of the park. He is trying to be a better all-around hitter. You can see it in some of the swings. And that is, I think, is making a huge difference. And he's at 303 right now. He's fourth in batting in the Pacific League. So that's a big deal. Yuma Mune, whom a guy, I think he seems to be a really near elite defender on the infield. I thought, you know, I remember him coming up as an infielder, and they said, well, they're going to stick him in the outfield because there's no place to play him on the infield. He's good in the outfield. He's really good in center. He's their defensive replacement in center sometimes, but I don't know. I haven't seen, I mean, he made really good plays at third. He has made some really good plays at second. I guess third base is maybe his best position, because that's where I've seen him the most. I don't know, but he's really coming into his own. I think when we talked about him earlier this season, we said, you know, he's coming into his man body. He was so skinny and spindly the first time I saw him, and he's put a little bit more meat on his bones, and he's hitting, you know, a little bit more regularly. Now, still, he's not tearing it up. He's not a 300 hitter or anything, but he certainly, like I said, he had a good day against Masahiro Tanaka on Saturday. He's pulling the ball. He's hitting to left field. I remember he knocked the ball. It was only a tie. I think it was a game against SoftBank. Then he hit a game tying hit in the ninth inning, and they got away with a draw that night. So I like those things. What do you like about Oryx that you've seen besides Yoshinobu Yamamoto?
Ah, well, of course, Masataka Yoshida is just a wonderful player. And one of the guys who I've for some reason, I liked him for no special reason other than just his consistently good numbers. And then when the more I watch him play, I just, you know, what a nice, compact, repeatable swing and huge amounts of power for such a small guy.
Mm.
So I like that. I do like the fact that Oryx always has this. Oryx teams tend to be very joyful. You know, when you watch them practice, they always seem to be having a good time. It's just that, you know, it seems like they
and then the game fun. Starts. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. Usually that's the downer. They're probably thinking things are downhill from here. But, you know, Dave Okubo, the other night in Pro Yaki News, said, you know, when you watch Oryx, you just wait for things to go wrong.
Right.
And, you know, it's not, as you said, it's not the errors you see on the score sheet. It's, you know, it's the missed tags and the bonehead plays and the throws to the wrong base and, you know, you name it and pretty much they're going to do it. And I was watching that on Saturday and I thought, wow, they were just walking right into this. You know, they had a horrible defensive game against Masahiro Tanaka, but they're playing, what I like is they're playing with a little more poise. You know, it used to be that when they made those mistakes, it's almost like said, damn, we are Oryx.
And yeah, now it's here we go again, yeah.
Yeah, now it's like, okay, you know, move on. And I that's the thing I'm getting from them. And the other thing I'm getting from them is the fact that their offense is beginning to show some life with Yuma Mune at the top of the order or wherever they happen to be batting, and Yutaro Sugimoto and Yuma Tongu. And then they've got a lot of options. They've got Tongu can catch and Terai Fushimi can catch, and they had Kenya Wakatsuki, who just came back and hadn't played for a while, who's probably their best defensive catcher.
Mm-hmm.
They're developing options. And I look at the games and it's easy to be distracted by Oryx because, you know, as you said, it's like they want every player to be a Swiss Army knife, to be able to play second short, third left, and then go in center and probably catch if need be.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, Fushimi.
No, it's possible. You're not, yeah. It's not a lot. Yeah.
But they all, I'd have to think hard about any player besides Wakatsuki who doesn't play at least two positions on that team. So anyway, but that's the thing. And their starting pitching has been good, and their starting pitching has continued to be good.
I would say adequate to good. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I mean, it has been for a couple of years. The overall quality has been good. The consistency has been a little ragged. Right now, the bullpen's a little... You know, they lost Tyler Higgins, hasn't been pitching, and they needed Atsushi Nomi to close for them.
That'll last them one round through the Pacific League.
Yeah,
I
think it got him two. I think he was going for his third save the other day when it didn't work. But he's a smart guy, and I think he can make some adjustments with what he's got. But he'll, you know, people will figure him out too. So that's going to be interesting to see. But the point is that Nakajima is, as he was last year, he's giving opportunities to young kids. And as the team gets a little more poised and they're showing a little more maturity, mm-hmm. sense of playing when they're behind and realizing, you know, and sort of understanding that they can overcome mistakes and still win games. I think they're gonna play up to their potential.
Yeah, and I mean, look at it this way. Look at the expectations for the team. We all said negative things toward the team in the prediction special. I think, and this team is right around 500, but it's under 500, and yet we're all impressed. We're all saying such positive things.
Well, the reason we all say negative things is because we had a contest who could say the meanest things about Oryx and still sound nice.
Yeah, but and we're just kind of surprised, and I think a lot of us
pleasantly surprised,
but again, just waiting to see if this is real or if it's going to fall off or what's going to happen. But they, you know, a lot of teams have had their share of injuries. The SoftBank Hawks have had a bunch of injuries, maybe more than any other team, it seems. and somehow they're in the playoff picture, though. And I wouldn't be surprised if the Hawks end up at the top, but you know, they're hit with injuries, a lot of injuries. And I was watching some game somewhere. I don't think it was the Hawks game, but it must've been the Hawks game because they were talking about Vladimir Coco Ballantyne being on the farm. And so,
yeah. How, when they lost Yuriy Belgracial, they left Coco on the farm.
Right. Yeah. And, but you know, they don't have their usual complement of foreign sluggers or hitters at the moment, and still they're up there near the top. So, getting back to the Buffaloes, though, I like what they're doing. You hit the nail on the head with the rotation, but I am worried about the bullpen. They're just trying everything to see what sticks. I think they're just bringing pitchers out there and say, well, look, get us a couple outs or get us an out here, and we'll just go to the next guy. And if you can't get him out, we'll pull guys out and put somebody else in. And so I'm not sure how that's going to keep going. But, you know, I tell you this, when you turn on an Oryx game and you look, we've gone all this time. We haven't even talked about Adam Jones, who, you know, has been relegated to basically pinch hitting duty.
Well, right now he's relegated to the minor leagues because of discomfort in both hips.
Yeah, discomfort in both hips. That's a new one.
I think some of Oryx fans are having discomfort in both
ears.
In slash line, you know, all three numbers of the slash line.
Right. Where else do we have? We haven't mentioned Stephen Moya, who is having a good season.
Yep.
I mean, he's productive. I would imagine they would want a little bit more power from him, but you know, if you put him out there enough, he's going to make some contact once in a while too.
Right. He's fairly good at making adjustments. Sometimes, you know, he hits, he's hitting a baseball. How could you not be inconsistent hitting a baseball? You know what I mean? It's really, really hard. And so the swings he puts on some balls are just incredibly good. And other times he's fooled. So, you know, that puts him in the category with most guys whose names aren't Masataka Yoshida.
Yeah. Okay.
Stephen Romero came back, and I don't know what it is. As soon as he gets back in Oryx, I guess he got hurt again. Which was what happens when you play for, he plays for Oryx, I think. Maybe that's a secret. It should be at Rock 10. I don't know.
Yeah. So, they're close. 17 and 19, I guess officially fifth place, but they're right there with the Lions in terms of where they are.
Wow.
in the standings. So,
good for them.
But that's on the second. I think, you know, in the preseason special, maybe I'll talk about we can talk about the standings next week. I had the top three teams and the bottom three teams kind of stratified, and I saw a kind of a line of demarcation there. And at the moment, that's the way it's working out. But I you know, the Marines have not gotten on that big roll yet. They overcame that sluggish start. The Eagles have probably been the most consistent team, but sometimes again, they just fail to score. And
that offense, you know, is a kind of a hit and miss thing.
Hit and miss kind of a thing. And so they got one run today, but they pitched past it. And Takahisa Hayakawa, the rookie, had his first shutout today. He shut out the Buffaloes. But it's one of those games that I talked about where it's a 1-0 game, and you can lose a lot of those to the Eagles probably this season. But, of course, saying that, Hideaki Wakui had a really rough start. This past week, he only went three innings, got beaten up pretty good, and got. They said it was his shortest outing with the Eagles. So,
yep.
So you can have those as well, and then we'll get to Malkoon. But Malkoon is a loser right now, as we speak, people. He's 2-3, and
stick a fork in him, he's done.
not at all, but. It's just weird, but that, you know, that team looks good. And the Marines, like I said, they haven't gotten on a roll yet, but I like the way they look. I like the production that they're getting from different people in the lineup. Hisanori Yasuda really just looks like a real pro now, real consistent. They did bring up Seiya Inoue, who, the guy I like to call Chubbs, the big heavy hitter. He hasn't really caught fire yet, but he's getting some playing time, so maybe he'll catch fire. Brandon Laird had a really good week this past week. He did catch fire, and that propelled them a little bit, but nobody can seem to, you know, break away from the pack. I just like the competitiveness of the Pacific League, and it's a good competitiveness. And even the Fighters, they had a really bad start, but I like what they've been doing in recent weeks, and they've been more competitive. They just you talk about an offense that's inconsistent.
Well, yeah, the big thing with the Fighters has been, I mean, yeah, inconsistent. I mean, Kensuke Kondo had a pretty good April. Mm-hmm. And that was a huge bit in their coming around. He had a bunch of home runs, and he was, you know, typical Kensuke Kondo. And the other thing that really I like about the Fighters was suddenly Wong Po Jung remembered that, you know, when he was in Taiwan, he was a really, really, really good hitter.
A 400 hitter, yeah.
It's like he forgot about it for 2 years. He's like, woke up one morning, is like, probably his mom called and said, Wong, you know, Po Jung, dear, you know, you're better than this. Go get him.
Yeah, something happened. And that's
something happened because he's been good.
Yeah, and again, that team has been better in the past weeks, or the past 2 weeks for sure. And also the Lions lost their closer. I thought for sure that Kaima Taita was going to just be the closer straight up. And they've been going with Reed Garrett.
Well, they weren't until he blew a game, and they brought him back. they sat him in the naughty chair for a couple of games.
Right, the naughty chair. Do you have to wear a cap with that? I know.
I don't know. That's a rugby term. Sorry for slipping that in. Okay.
Oh, that's fine. That's fine. You can sin bin him.
Very good.
But
he was back there today. So.
And weird play. Caught stealing ends the game out there at second base.
I know.
What are we doing here? I think that was that is exactly what Lotte manager Tadahito Iguchi was saying. What are we doing here? Yeah.
Well, yeah, that was like when Koshiro Wada was thrown out at second, he's like going, hey, buddy, didn't you like read the rules? You're not supposed to be able to throw me out. I'm too fast.
Yeah.
And Iguchi, the announcers kept going like, oh, he's going to challenge this one. This was close. But he looked too disgusted to challenge it.
Yeah, he's like, what are we doing here?
It's like, I don't even want to go there. I don't want to see it again. I didn't want to watch it on the big screen again.
Yeah, he's like, I didn't want to see it once. I definitely don't want to see it twice.
The best reason for not challenging a play.
Yeah, but Tatsushi Masuda, the closer for the Lions, and you said he's throwing on the farm? Because I didn't say that.
Hurt. I said he was on the farm. Yeah. Well, I heard. Yeah, I think that what was hurt was his command. I didn't know it was a physical ailment.
Yeah. Yeah. Again, that's one of those, what did he say? Discomfort in both hips.
Discomfort in the pitching line.
Hashtag high.
That'll get you put on the farm to go down and make some adjustments. All right, let's switch over to the Central League, and I'm trying to avoid it, but we're going to have to talk about Matt's other team, the Dragons, his first team in Japan. I can speak as a fan. I don't know. I don't want to bore the audience, so I'll try to be entertaining. I can equate watching the Dragons try to score a run is similar to watching two shy, nerdy-type people trying to hook up at a masquerade party in the dark. I mean, it's just not happening. It's just not happening.
I'm almost – okay, I'm done with that analogy. Let's move to the next one.
Well, it's Weekend at Bernie's. You know, they just prop up the dead body in the batting box, the batter's box, and try to get a hit. I mean, it's awful. You know, when Yota Kyoda, I think you once said he and Sosuke Genda were twins when they were rookies because their numbers were similar. And I said, no way. You know, Genda's way ahead of Kyoda. He's much better. I'd rather have him. And since that rookie season, Kyoda has just been, he's been adequate to awful. And I don't know if it's train wreck worthy or not. He's got such a beautiful swing, but he cannot hit with two strikes. Every time there are two strikes on him, he flails at the same slider down and away. You see the catcher set up down and away, and pitchers throw a ball in the dirt, whether it's a slider or a curve or just a changeup, anything in the dirt away, and he can't lay off of him and he can't hit him. And I don't want to blame it all on him. He's just part of the problem. It's just like no one got hot. No one is hot for a time there. Takuya Kinoshita, the catcher, had a stretch where he was hot earlier in the season. Then he went away.
He had a stretch last week where he was hot.
Stretch last week when he was hot, had a couple home runs in at Koshien. They couldn't win those games because they couldn't pitch. You know, they got it was with Jason Koskri on Twitter. He said something about the Dragons scoring, and I said, well, they got a couple of games worth of runs tonight. They better try to win this game. You know, they got four runs and couldn't win and end up – they didn't lose. They ended up tying. And, I mean, you know, they tied today. They were one of the four ties, the Father's Day joke. And I swear, I walked away thinking, well, you know, yay, they didn't lose. I mean, I don't know how the fans get through. In fact, I saw some of the fans, you know, they're supposed to be – joyfully and vigorously waving their towels for the players when they come up to when they come up and take their at bats. And this was a, you know, 2-run game. It was a close game and the fans couldn't even drum up enough energy to wave those towels vigorously today. They were just like kind of holding them up. Is this thing on? Is the camera on me? Is this thing high enough? They were just the poor fans. I mean, and so Mike Gerber, they brought him up from the farm. I think I said, you know, he was getting a few hits down there and they're like, well, we can't waste these. We got to bring him up. And you can just see in the swing and the approach, all that is good, but he just doesn't know right now yet what he's looking at. He's looking at strikes. He's swinging at balls more often. And when that happens, I think he'll, when he can flip that, when he's swinging at more strikes and letting the balls or the pitches out of the strike zone go by, I think we'll see more consistent contact from him. But I think for sure he's going around the first time with the league and hasn't seen any of these pitchers. And you've got Dion Viciedo is not hitting. Toshiki Abe is not hitting. I mean, none of the guys are hitting. And I looked on the farm and I said, you know, because I think I suggested this earlier this year. I said, look, Takaya Ishikawa, the rookie they drafted in 2019, I guess it would have been because he was a rookie last year. I thought, well, maybe if he's hitting, they could just bring him up and put him in left field and let him, you know, do what he does. Because from right now, what I've seen from Akira Neo, he still needs more time to grow as a hitter and be able to handle different kinds of pitches in different situations. And he had some success, but he's just not consistent enough. And if he's going to be hitting in the 100s, you might as well bring somebody else in who maybe isn't as good a defender. You got to sacrifice something. And I'm starting to worry about manager Tsuyoshi Yoda as the skipper because they're approaching that magic number of 10 games under. They're at 7 games under 500 right now. Mm-hmm. And once you get to 10, things start to get really bad. The voices get louder. I don't know if they're the voices in your head or the voices in the room.
You hear voices now, man.
I'm not hearing them.
You could ask Daisuke Miura. If anybody's hearing him, I'll bet he is.
Well, I think he's safe, though. I think he's safe because he's such a popular figure. Because I thought about this when they got to 10 games under a few weeks ago. And I thought, oh, you know, this he looks bad. And they're losing games because he's kind of in this rookie vortex where he can't, he came out with not all the full complement of players. Okay. Well then the foreigners came back and immediately he's inserted them into the lineup and they still didn't win. And I'm like, okay, this is a problem. But then people will give him a break because these foreign players, you know, they just got in the lineup. They just got to Japan. They'll have some more time. So then it's been 2 full weeks of having those players, maybe 3, right? 2+ for sure. 2+ weeks of having Soto and Neftali Soto and Tyler Austin in the lineup pretty regularly, and they're still not winning games. But I still say that he's fine. Yoda is in his third season
as the manager. Yeah, I think that's the difference, yeah.
And they just have not shown any kind of improvement. They haven't shown – I mean, I was talking to somebody at work the other day. I said, when's the last time the Dragons got a rookie who really came on and has been a regular contributor. And the person said to me, Kyoda. And I'm like, oh, you're right. But it just doesn't feel like he's he's an elite defensive shortstop. I don't want to get rid of his glove at short.
No, absolutely not.
No, but he just has not proven to be a consistent person. He had one stretch as a productive offensive player. I think that was 10 days ago, where for three games he started hitting. They dropped him out of the lineup a little bit for a couple games, but
they put him back in and he started in the eighth inning.
Oh, yeah, he knocked in a run, right?
Yeah,
ground ball single, was it?
Yep, that's enough.
Yeah, that was a stretch. So they're really struggling as a team. I wrote the other day on Twitter, I said they got their run for the game, and I'm like, yeah, well, one little run. I don't think the Tigers are worried about the Dragons scoring one little run to beat them. And of course, the Tigers came back and won the game. So I don't know. Like I said, worry about Yoda as the skipper. If they continue this week, I think we're going to hear the rumblings. But I could go on forever. But they're not. They're still not as bad as DeNA. DeNA is 11-26.
Well, I watch the Dragons. I watch the Dragons more than I used to.
Oh, you poor guy.
No, and there's a reason why I watch them. I watch them to see the pitchers. I watch it. You know, I watch them to see Yuya Yanagi pitch, and I love some of their pitchers, and I want to see even Udayono's having, as we expected, his command is not as sharp as that guy who was, basically was throwing Xerox copies of his best pitches out there.
Yeah, last year. Yeah.
So he's not that guy, but he's still good. And I'm fine. I'm actually looking forward to watching the replay of today's game because Yuya Yanagi pitched and he's just been amazing this year.
Just so, that one mistake. And they made that same pitch to Munetaka Murakami before, and he took him out to left field, and they came back with that same pitch, and he hit it out. I believe it was two strikes again this time, and they just tried to sneak a pitch past him on the outside, and just flicked his wrists.
That and also having watched, at the beginning of the season, I would say that, well, let's see, I saw like three at bats by Akira Nail last year, and I wasn't. Nothing about it impressed me, but I think he's going to click. I don't think, he's not there yet. He's making adjustments, but I love his swing. I mean, I really didn't have any idea. I could see why, there's a huge difference between the numbers you put up, your performance, and the quality of your work. The two things are not one-to-one,
right?
Until we're talking about thousands and thousands of plate appearances. So I looked and I saw a guy who'd done nothing in the minors and was continuing to do nothing in the minors and was doing nothing anywhere, and to hear Alonzo Powell said, I like what he's doing, and not seeing it, I just have to take his word for it, which I would when it comes to hitting. I know pretty much nothing, but watching him swing, for a smaller guy, he's not a big guy, but he's a smaller guy, but he swings a big bat and he hits the ball pretty hard. So I like that. He's not the typical, I'm a fast left-handed hitter, I'm going to try to hit it past the third baseman and try to beat out an infield single. So I like that. So okay. I think he's going to go some places, and I do like the pitchers. So I do. Maybe it's a perverse pleasure. Maybe I'm slightly masochistic, but I have enjoyed watching the Dragons.
Well, their ERA leads the way in MPB, so it's not all bad. And no. I probably made it sound that way, but we got to move on here. We've got to make a four-seam transition and talk about as the pitch turns with Masahiro Tanaka, and we're going to add rocking and rolling with Roki Sasaki, who also made his debut. So let's start with Ma-kun. The Buffaloes beat him on Saturday 4-3, and gee, this stadium was once called Green Stadium Kobe. Is that?
It was the original name was Green Stadium Kobe.
Yeah, now it's Hotomoto Stadium, and
it has been a number of things. It's been a version of Yahoo. I think it was Yahoo Wi-Fi Net Dome or something, and it was named after a low-cost airline.
Ugh. All right. Well, I've always argued, though, that I think that place helps fly balls, especially in the daytime, and it seemed to help on Saturday when Yoshida hit that home run that we talked about earlier. He poked it out to left field in the sixth inning with two on, including Yuma Mune, who was on base, who had singled. So Makun, he threw seven innings, gave up six hits, eight strikeouts, no walks, and no hit batters. And he gave up those three runs on the one home run. So based on his record, like I said, he's a loser now. He's 2-3, and he pitched well. Even the home run, I didn't think that was a bad pitch. I just
– No, it wasn't.
And Tanaka was shaking his head. He was like, did that ball really go out over the fence? And they had a video replay on it. And I'm like, what are they replaying?
Well,
nobody reached over the fence.
Yeah, I think somebody thought because of the way it bounced, it was a Tokyo Dome special in Kobe.
Stop wasting our time. That's a home run. That's what a home run looks like.
Well, the point is, the trajectory was very, very high. So I don't know. They must have been thinking that it hit off the padding on the top of the wall and bounced into the stands.
But that's a home run.
Well, no, if it hits off the padding on the top of the wall and then bounces over the fence that separates doubles from home runs, that's not a home run. That's a ground rule double.
I didn't see any. That's what a home run looks like to me. You went over the
bench. it was a home run clearly to me, but the thing that
good
got
view,
to,
yeah.
Yeah, I'm saying it was a ball that basically those are the home runs you typically hit at Tokyo Dome. Yeah. Those high fly balls to the opposite field that just land in the front row.
So yeah, Makun, he looked pretty good most of the game to me, and I wanted to point out that he has still not been taken out mid inning, and this goes back. I think that entire run of quality starts that he put in. We can look it up. I know I'm surprising you with this stat because I just looked up this year and I remember that he didn't get taken out the entire season mid inning. When he last threw in Japan, that was 2013. So
I remember that.
Yeah. So this streak is going where he just doesn't come out in the middle of an inning. Don't even bother to come out to the.
Well, I think that's because most pitching coaches and managers are afraid of him.
Yeah, I was going to say they don't want to get their butts kicked, right?
He might do that. I don't think he would because it's a real gentleman and he's a real.
No, he wouldn't on the mound there in front of everybody. But you got to go to the locker room sometime.
Yeah, but he's definitely got the looks that could kill.
Yeah. So, I thought he pitched really well, and that wasn't a bad pitch, and it got hit out, and sometimes that happens, and they didn't score enough runs. And so they lost 4-3.
Yeah, it was funny because it was every Tanaka game. This reminds me so much of Tanaka post elbow strain with the Yankees. And that every game was a different look. And this is how it's been in Japan. Every game has been a different look. The first time it was start with fastballs and throw them, and when the location was bad, still throw fastballs. The next game it was, okay, we'll go back to the fastball later. And then the third game it was a little bit more of game two. And then the fourth game he started using his two-seamer. In fact, he kind of ditched the fastball and went to the two-seamer. And this time, instead of where's Wally, it was where's Moss's fastball because it pretty much didn't exist.
Mm.
It was a two-seamer, and he throws it with a little tilt, so it's more like a shuto. He throws it a little more, gets more over the top than most of his other pitches.
Okay.
So it breaks more horizontal than sinks, and he's using that as kind of a reverse cutter. And he was getting he was getting a lot of mileage out of that, but it's also a little bit of a trick pitch because, he told me, it's never really been I don't have a good feel for it. I'm always looking on ways to use it, but it's, not my big pitch. So I was kind of surprised to see him use the big pitch, but his splitter was also AWOL on Saturday. And here's the thing. His fastball and his splitter were both nowhere to be seen. He was missing his changeup, which is another version of his splitter. Mm-hmm. The only pitches that were working was the slider and the two-seamer. And I mean, the fastball was okay. The four-seamer was fine. I didn't think he had any problems with it. I mean, it had zip, and he was using it to set up his other pitches. But it was what I'm getting to is he was fooling people by having completely different looks. The good thing was he didn't walk anybody.
Right.
He was trying with these different pitches. People didn't know what was coming. They didn't know what they were looking for. He struck out eight. He didn't walk any. The pitch he threw, I mean, it could have, it's like, could I have been smarter? Could I have done a better thing? Yes, it could have been a better pitch, but it wasn't a bad one. It wasn't a mistake. You know, it could have had a little more, it could have run off the barrel a little more, I suppose, but it's Masataka Yoshida.
It could have been lower. You know, a lot of pitches that get hit out could have been down a little bit more.
Yeah, it could have, but he's just a really, really good hitter.
Yeah.
And that happens. And, you know, and both of the hits that he gave up before that were balls that were location hits. You know, if they'd 5 feet one way or the other, or a little less on them, and they're ground outs.
Yep. Yep.
So that's where we are.
Okay.
So
all right.
Good game. Best mate. Okay. I'll just say that was probably his best game. I think that was the best game he's pitched this year, even though he lost. So.
Okay. Even though he didn't have all those things working, like you said.
Yeah. Because that wasn't the plan. I mean, the splitter, I mean, he didn't throw it a lot. It's not like he kept going back to it and it wasn't working, but the splitter wasn't working last week either. So,
okay. All right. And also today on Sunday, Lotte rookie Roki Sasaki made his long-anticipated debut in a game that ended in a 6-6 tie at Zozo Marine Stadium. They got him on the mound at home. We didn't get to see him all last season. Finally, we get to see him on a top team mound in a game at Zozo. And I was kind of disappointed because I didn't see the blazing fastball pitch after pitch. And he said he wasn't nervous, but it looked like too many times to me he was just aiming the ball and he wasn't letting loose and just firing the ball. And he allowed 4 runs on 6 hits with 2 walks, 5 strikeouts in 5 innings, 107 pitches. I expected the announcers to say, oh, he's hit 160. Oh, he's hit 155 on the gun. But they just, and these are kilometers per hour. But they just didn't talk about it. And he just didn't. He threw a lot of different pitches. He wasn't just rearing back and throwing all fastballs. And except for that first pitch that he threw to fellow rookie Gakuto Wakabayashi, who laced it into center field for a hit on his very first pitch. But, yeah, I just wanted to see him rear back and throw. I wanted to see the blazing fastball, and we just didn't see that.
When we saw what we instead saw was a lot of control.
Yes, but, I could almost tell when he was going to throw something off speed in his windup, and he did. And then he hit spots for the most part, but, again, he just wasn't firing the ball. I'm like, what are you holding back for?
Right. You see, I got that too. Somebody hit this low splitter right off the shoe tops. And it was a good pitch, and I'm just saying he knew it was coming. You know,
he threw it in the middle too. It was right down.
Yeah, but okay, it's also 4 inches off the ground. So,
but the middle of the plate is the easier place to get the bat to. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Right. Okay.
No, it really is. I mean,
it is. It's easier than throwing it outside. Yes, but still, it's not a splitter's not an easy pitch to catch when it's dropping near the ground. No. So, but he was down there and he was all over it. It wasn't a great splitter, but it was still. It's not an easy pitch to hit, and he did a good job on it. And that was the thing I took away from this is that the Lions had a pretty good plan to go after him. I thought they took good. They mashed a couple of his mistakes. They hit a couple of good pitches, but I'll agree with you. He did look like he was holding back, focusing on where he was throwing more than what he was throwing. So, and he also did, he might have been tipping his pitches, which was something I was looking for. I was hoping to get a chance to actually look at the video because I after I saw Wakabayashi, I think it was, hit that splitter, I think, okay, maybe he's showing something that they know it's coming. So I don't know if that's the case, but if he is, then the Marines will do something about it.
Yeah, well, I'd say, yeah, do something about it. Let it, unleash him. Let my people throw.
Ooh, very good. That's a good one, John.
Wow. Just let him throw. Just quit all this control stuff. If people are going to hit 160 consistent fastballs and you can get him close to the place that he's actually intends for them to go, and he's not hitting people all over the place, just let him throw. Next. All right. Let's go to a couple of notes. Zealous Wheeler of the Giants got a hit tonight on Sunday, I should say this afternoon, and extended his remarkable, unlikely, difficult to have predicted hitting streak to 21 games. Now, it's not that I didn't think he was capable of doing such a thing, but given the acquisitions in the preseason or in the offseason of Justin Smoak and the now injured Eric Thames, I just didn't foresee this kind of playing time for Zealous Wheeler and this many at-bats, and for him to be able to find the consistency to hit in 21 consecutive games. So congratulations to Z, and we're trying to get him on the show, so hopefully that'll go over well. But, what do you think about this 21 in a row?
Yeah, congratulations. He's just really blossoming. And all I think about what a positive, good teammate he is. I mentioned the bit about him doing the pregame pep talk, and he did that a couple of days ago. Maybe it was this week, maybe it was last week, but I noticed that on the news and I'm going, wow, you know, he's out there, he's being one of the guys, and people are, you know, he's taken over the Alex Ramirez role.
Okay.
As being the guy who keeps the Giants, the role that Alex Ramirez had and then Shinosuke Abe has. And really, nobody has it except maybe for Hayato Sakamoto, but he's just a little stiff for that. You know, he's not the guy who's going to come up and go, hey, what's up?
Okay.
But Z's the guy, and I think that's big for them, having him in the lineup every day.
Okay. So, yeah, his 21-game hitting streak is, according to Yahoo, ties a streak by Giants legend Shigeo Nagashima, who did it in 1969, and also Kiyoshi Nakahata, our buddy, had a streak that long in 1981. The club record is 30 games, Isao Harimoto in 1976. So, you know, whenever it gets to 20, it gets real serious, so... Congratulations to Z.
Except my 10-second rant.
You got 10 seconds.
Nobody keeps records of this where everybody can see them. We can't look up, what's the third, you know, the 10th longest hitting streak in Japan. The only people who keep it are in the individual team's media guides for their own team. So get on it, NPB.
Yes, get on it, NPB. Also, we did know here that Yoshitomo Tsutsugo, I think it was, I don't know, Tuesday before I went to sleep, I saw a story that Tampa Bay Times was saying he should be called Yoshitomo Tsutsugogo or something like that, mm-hmm. to that effect. And then he was DFA'd by the time I woke up in the morning on Wednesday. And then I went to the office this morning and he was a Dodger. So... I'm shocked. Anyway, I just assumed he would be coming back home. The article said that NPB teams were on the table in terms of for him coming back. So we'll talk about his prospects if he doesn't work out with the Dodgers at another time. Also, didn't get a chance to mention it last week, and I'm going to force it in here. This week, Yuki Matsui of the Eagles became the youngest pitcher to reach 150 saves. He did it a week ago today. My comments about him are about Dave Okubo, who is the mastermind behind his switch from starter to closer. And that was a decision that could impact the Hall of Fame because he's on that path right now. He's 25 years, 6 months. Mm. The previous record was Yasuaki Yamasaki of the DNA Bay Stars, who at 26 and 9 months was the youngest to get to that figure. So 15 months faster, and Matsui had spent most of the year last year, the first COVID year, as a starter. So he could have really smashed that record had he not been doing that last year and had spent the whole entire year just saving, not the entire year, but all the games that he was available, closing instead of being a starter. So congratulations to him, and let's see if he can get to 300.
We also had today Frank Herman of the Lotte Marines recorded his 100th hold in NPB. Congratulations, Frank.
Congratulations, Big Frank. All right, but it's a long show. We appreciate the interview. Thank you, Jim, for doing it.
My pleasure.
And we don't have any high heat. We're all out of high heat, so we hope to get some from you this week. Send it to @JBWPodcast on Twitter with the hashtag high heat, or questions, including MP3s, via email to YAKYUJOHN@gmail.com, or you can hit us up on the Facebook page and leave us a message, a comment, or anything that's going on there. I'm assuming you don't have anything going on tomorrow, Jim?
Nothing going on. I will be posting the live chat with Kent Blassingame, the Hawks professional scout, the video from that momentarily, and another study that goes with that about player development. So look forward to that on jballallen.com.
All right, guys, we will talk to you next week. Enjoy your baseball.
See you at the Japanese ballparks, baby.